The planning commission will hold the regularly scheduled meetings via Zoom conference until further notice. Start off with a roll call. Vicky Malloy is absent at the moment. James Wiggs.
Here.
Ryan Kelso, I'm here. Jim Newberry.
Here.
Ed Martinez.
Here.
Joel Walensky.
Here.
Carl Blum.
Here.
And Pat Hammersmith.
Here.
All right. Start off with administrative items. First off, dealing with the special meeting minutes from July 22nd of 2020, and seeing if each of you have had the opportunity to see the revised minutes and if there's anything that needs to be adjusted there or if it is acceptable as written.
One correction we made was a repeat. Actually took us two times to get it right. It was a line that was from an earlier set of minutes, and we struck that line, and that was the only opposition to passing the minutes during the last meeting. And that line's gone.
So if we're in agreements, we need a motion to approve.
I think I'll abstain based on I wasn't part of the committee at that time.
I'm in that same category. Sorry, guys.
Thank you, Ed and Joel.
I'll move to pass the meeting, the minutes.
Jim makes a motion first. Is there a second? Carl seconds. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. Welcome, Vicky. You're on mute there. There you go.
Okay. I just couldn't bring it up. I kept clicking and it wouldn't do anything.
We had to release it for you, Vicky.
Okay.
Next,
you guys.
Next item is meeting minutes from September 9th. That's our last meeting, and seeing if each of you have had an opportunity to take a look at that as well. And if there's any discussion or a motion to approve, if it's...
I'll make a motion to approve.
I'll second it.
So we got a first from Joel and a second from Vicky. Is there any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. So the meeting minutes from September 9th, 2020 are approved as written. Next item on the agenda is open for public comment period. If there's an item that is not on tonight's agenda that someone within the public would like to speak, you can signal with notation at the bottom of your screen, little wave hand or some function thereof that catches our attention.
And at the bottom of the participants list, if they click the participants list, it'll pull up all the names. And at the bottom, they should see a raise hand option at the bottom of the white column. I don't see any.
So hearing and seeing none, we will move on to old business. And we will be continuing on here with a deliberation on short-term rentals. And I did see Lisa on. Maybe she's...
She's on, but she's not. She originally had a schedule conflict, so we didn't build this meeting around her. The presentation that I sent you today, Lisa hasn't actually seen. I can forward it to her by email here in a minute. But I basically, what I did is I took one of Lisa's late-term, short-term rental presentations and edited it to put the process pieces in to reflect what we're currently doing as far as process and the remand coming back. So I'm gonna email this to you, Lisa.
I got it off the website.
Oh, great.
Just now, so yeah.
Good. Well, disregard that. If it's all right with you, Mr. Chair, I'll just walk you through this. It's not a lengthy document. You've seen numerous elements of it before, but this just puts it in the context of today's meeting.
Please do so. Thank you, Jim.
Okay. I'll share my screen here. So you should be seeing short-term rentals on your screen, cover page.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm going to. So this is just an overview of process. So the Board of Commissioners' vision statement has been removed for further consideration. You're not to consider that at the direction of the Board of Commissioners. The Planning Commission revisited the issue on July, excuse me, that's a typo. This is a Planning Commission revisit of the July 9, 2020 final recommended draft STR code. So that's taking basically the code with the vision statement struck from any of the documents. We're taking the code as you passed it on July 9th, 2020, and have brought it back to you in an amended form that removes all references to that. The Planning Commission needs to review, possibly further edit, deliberate, and then potentially vote on a new draft code. And then the process would be similar to what you did after July 9th, and that is we carry the code forth under the new draft code to the Board of Commissioners. And then we'll need to talk somewhere during the meeting today, schedule considerations, if by chance we're not able to complete this process in one night. And we'll also discuss next steps at that point as well, depending on what the outcome of tonight's meeting is. So the process that was used before involved these three steps. You've seen these before. The situation assessment and developing code options that occurred in the spring and late spring and into beginning of summer, the study session and the public hearing that we had. And then once you passed it out on July 9th, it went to the Board of County Commissioners and they were in a series of work sessions anticipating that second block to be a public hearing, then deliberation and decision. But due to circumstances involving a lawsuit regarding the creation of the vision statement by the Board of Commissioners, they made the decision to remand it back to the Planning Commission for further consideration minus the vision statement. So I created this new slide that creates the new process that we're doing continuing forward. And that's where we are right now. It's step four, which you had your public hearing, which was the first block. We did take written comments, which are on the website and which you've received from two separate sessions. I don't have an exact count on that, but it's round numbers. It's about 100 additional comments. And we had about 38 people who testified at the hearing. And then after you review, possibly edit and deliberate further and pass something out, then step five will be the former step three, and that is where it will go back to the Board of County Commissioners for further work session. And then after the work session, to a public hearing, so the public will have an opportunity to speak on this matter and may be allowed to provide written comments in addition. And then there would be deliberation and a decision on a final code from them. So as far as what you've done so far, you've had your hearing on September 9th. And we're in this meeting now on September 23rd, and I put the and question mark because, again, we don't know if we'll get through this today. And then a subsequent decision, whether that's tonight or at that later point. Then it'll go to the Board of County Commissioners for, as I said, study sessions, hearing, etc. Those have not been set, and so they don't show up on the calendar yet. There's no agenda dates set after today because we won't know that until after today's meeting. This is just a rehash of the earlier testimony that's been taken. We had the public hearing where 84 speakers over approximately 4 hours on June 17th. So we can add 38 more based on our recent hearing. We had about 271 people on that Zoom. I believe the highest number I saw on the Zoom from the 9th was either 122 or right in there, give or take. Written comments that were taken up until June 19th were 900 with over 1,545 pages. And as I said, we've got about 100 new comments with more than that in the total number of pages that were submitted. And this just refers to the technology that we used as far as dedicating a website to it, which is even, I think, functioning better than it has been at any point, as well as the dedicated email helped focus all the email into that box. We were able to pick up a few other comments that came into other locations. They were intended to go to there, so we routed them to that box. And that allowed us to have one collection point and improve our process in not missing comments and having to go resubmit onto the website comments that we had missed before. So where we are now is we have a draft code that is a code outline. One of the things that was discovered this week that I need to advise you about is this actually focuses you. It was determined through a little bit of research that the fees and enforcement section, Title III and Title 16 respectively, are actually outside of the purview of the Planning Commission. We discovered that when we were looking at the water code issue and determined that. Now, that said, you have provided a starting point that the commissioners may or may not consider. But when you look at the Chelan County Code that outlines under the administrative code for Title 14, which puts down duties for the director, the Planning Commission, and the Board of Commissioners, Title III and Title 16 aren't listed among the codes that are handled by the Planning Commission. So that's something you're going to be able to have off your plate and better focus your time on a lower number of sections to review. This flowchart was developed by Lisa at Burke, and it just shows, and we can see that again if we need it, this shows that all STRs in the county will need to be permitted or have a CUP depending on the circumstances and their reference in the code, and must meet the criteria. And then it breaks it down into the three tiers that are in the code, the owner occupied, plus any tier in a planned unit development or a master plan resort zone. Those are, you can have any of them that are permitted with criteria. Tier two are non-owner occupied, permitted with criteria. And then tier three are larger or greater than a total of 12 person occupancy. And then you can see how it flows and it shows you any potential caps or any potential sunsetting that goes through there. But the take home is that all, at least initially, even those that would sunset would be required to go through a permitting process once the code was adopted. And this just shows the breakdown of the different areas and sub areas that are referenced when we're talking through the code document. And this is a summary, but I don't know that we need to refer to this. This just simply talks about sunsetting, and on the right side, that existing short-term rentals must follow all of these different criteria and show that they were in use before if they're going to be allowed to continue. Then there was a task force proposal that was put forth and passed out from the Planning Commission that had essentially a group that would be convened in 24 to 36 months from passage of the code in order to reevaluate and see if the code is doing what we intended it to do and any potential changes that might be needed to be then recommended back to the Planning Commission for additional consideration before going to the Board of Commissioners. And that would consist of three owners of short-term rental units, three individual home owners who are not STR owners, two Planning Commission members, and a member of community development staff designated as the chairperson of the task force. And then there's a page that shows what other counties are doing compared to, we don't have any code right now, but this shows you what other counties are doing regarding use location restrictions, density limits, occupancy limits, solid waste, signage, et cetera. Permit system, whether they have an annual permit system, and inspections. And you can see on there that it varies by county. Pacific County has the most comprehensive in this state, and then Bend, Oregon also has the most comprehensive by comparison. So that takes care of the background information. Do you have any questions on anything that I showed before I move to a different document?
Will we be talking about the 1% cap countywide later on, or should we ask questions now because it happened on the chart that you showed?
Well, you, Mr. Chair, how would you like to handle that? Would you like to just walk through the code and address it, or did you want to go?
I would prefer to finish your review here, and then we just go through the code section so that we're following kind of a pathway where we can mark things up.
Okay. So I might ask Lisa to help me with some of this because I can answer questions, but I think she might be a little bit more conversant than me having to search. So I'm going to pull up a different document.
Is that going to be the short-term rental locations in history?
No, it would be this. Here, I'll show you. So it's this document, which does have some reference to that. It's not the document that Ed had prepared and pulled up that had the history. We can certainly cover that at any given point. His document that he created, that dashboard, basically shows the growth in the various areas through time,
right,
in a nutshell. So I was going to go through this document fairly quickly, but at least touch on the high points of it.
Now that's a part of the short-term rental deal. It's page one of it.
Yeah. Exhibit D.
Let me look. Just a second. Okay. Let's see. Which document are you working off of? Because my exhibit C is for this meeting is the minutes from September 9th.
Well, you've got in front of us the Chelan County short-term rentals, and then starting with introduction. That's what you posted.
September 23rd, I think it's titled. September 23rd, 2020, PC agenda. And it's exhibit D. That's what
D,
you're going through.
Not C.
D, as in dog.
D.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I have that. I just got to get to it. Apologize. I'm trying to figure out which document you're looking at, because I'm on the website PC agenda. So let me go back and see. We might be talking apples and oranges here. Planning Commission. Going to September. PC agenda packet. PC appended packet edition. That's just comments. Give me the title of the document again, Vicki.
Well, that you've got in front of us, the title of the document is Chelan County Short-Term Rentals, and it's the introduction to the actual short-term rental document. It's a part
right,
of
that's
it.
That's what I have up. You should be seeing that. Yep.
That's what we are seeing, and that's what I just said.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood. I understood that you weren't seeing what I'm seeing. You were seeing something different. So I was looking for something different.
We see it.
Okay. No.
That was a misunderstanding on my part. Yes, you were telling me what I have on the screen.
Okay.
Thank you. I was getting really nervous that I had screwed up again.
No.
Okay. Whew. All right. So yes, that's where I am. I'm on this, and I was going to go through this with you. You've already read it, but I was just going to scroll through it and hit some of the high points. as a reminder of where we've been, that the Planning Commission met 7 times over April to July 2020 to develop those short-term rental regulations, with a hearing on June 17th, deliberations on June 24th, and then July 9th, a decision. The Board of Commissioners met in July and August and then kicked it back to you. So the Planning Commission consultant and county staff since then reviewed the meeting minutes and direction from the Planning Commission and essentially rebuilt the draft document to clean it up and make sure it had all the reflected all of the changes that you had made and had them accurately based on that July 9th final product. And in that product, we had zones allowed. The short-term rental owner operator would determine if the zoning district permits or conditionally permits a short-term rental. Tier 1 owner-occupied short-term rentals are permitted in most zones in the county, provided they meet operational standards and obtain a land use permit. Tier 2 short-term rentals are non-owner occupied and are permitted, but are further restricted on lots in certain zones with a sunset clause or limited in numbers in areas where there is a higher concentration of existing short-term rentals.
Tier 3, can I interrupt?
Yes, you may.
Yeah, okay, on the zones allowed, I wrote up a document based on what I had, I've gone through the comprehensive plan and the district land use zoning. And what I found is that RR10, RR20, no, RR20, RW, RRR, RV do not allow for persons to have short-term rentals, bed and breakfasts, or anything like that. That's in the zone code.
Okay.
And so where we were allowing them, they are not allowed. However, however, RR10, RR5, and RR2.5 do permit residents of Chelan County the opportunity to have short-term rentals, and that the RC, which is rural commercial, allows for short-term rentals for both residents and non-residents. So there's only one area that non-residents can have a short-term rental if we're following the codes.
The existing codes
for Chelan County. The land use zoning.
Okay.
And I just want to point that out because I think erroneously we had made some decisions that weren't in line with either the land use zoning or the comprehensive plan. And I think we should have referenced those in our decision making.
Lisa, are you able to comment on that?
Yeah, I'm looking at the district use chart in Title 11, and I'm seeing bed and breakfast, 3 or fewer rooms are accessory uses in all the rural residential zones and some of the...
Bed and breakfast?
Uh-huh. And also guest inns are conditionally allowed, which are the larger 4 to 6 rooms. Those are conditional use permits in the rural residential zones.
Okay, well, the way it actually reads, if you follow what the definitions are for, like, as an example, rural waterfront, it says, uses appropriate for these areas include open space or blah, 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 blah. Such uses may include intensification of existing development or new development of small-scale water-related, water-dependent recreational or tourist uses, including commercial facilities to those recreational or tourist uses that rely on a rural location or setting, but that do not include a new residential component, intensification of development, on lots containing existing isolated non-residential uses, home occupations, bed, breakfasts, and community facilities. Those are things that are not allowed in, as an example, oh, this one was RW.
So Vicki, are you reading the zoning intent statements?
I'm reading 11.06.010.
Yeah, those are the intent statements. And then there's the district use chart, which has listed uses
that, that overrides it.
Well, it is an interpretation. You could consider the use table an interpretation of the zone intent statements over time. And I think those intent statements do give direction, but it needs to be read along with all the other aspects.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly this code gives you the opportunity to review what's allowed in those zones. But right now, the interpretation has been and listed bed and breakfasts are permitted as accessory uses. And then the larger guest inns are conditional use permits in most of those zones. And so I don't know the rationale behind all the zone intent statements and the differences with the use table and why, but it's pretty specific, I would say, in the use table that these sort of uses are that are similar but not exact are listed.
Are allowed.
Yeah.
And they're allowed in residential zones.
Right. If you go, Vicki, to the district use chart in section 1104020 and go to the residential use section, you'll see like I mentioned, the bed and breakfast, three or fewer rooms or accessory in all the RR and RW and RV and also commercial ag and commercial forest. And then the larger guest inns are conditional use permits in most of those areas.
The general principle is the district use chart governs.
Is it really?
It would be
okay,
a specific...
Okay, well, I was going by the definitions that I was reading.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I think that was what the intent was initially.
If I can make a... This is Catherine Lorbeer. If I can make a point of clarification, I believe there are semicolons in the paragraph that you're reading.
And right.
That is not allowed. Is it only refers to... but that do not include a new residential component, and then there's a semicolon. So the rest of the items in that sentence, those uses may be included in that district.
Well then, okay, then that doesn't make sense, because as an example, I'm looking at RR10, just because I pulled it up. See a rural location or setting, but that do not include a new residential component, intensification developments on lots containing existing isolated non-residential uses or new development of isolated cottage industries and isolated small-scale businesses that do not principally designed to serve the existing and projected rural population and non-residential uses, comma. But do provide for opportunities for rural residents, semicolon, home occupations, semicolon, bed and breakfast, semicolon, and community facilities. So in the top part of the paragraph, it says what are appropriate uses, and the bottom part says what are not appropriate uses. And
Vicki, a lot of those terms that are in that paragraph are in the use chart. So isolated cottage industries, isolated non-residential uses. I think they're listed in the chart. They're allowed conditionally in most of those zones. But I believe there's some specific language that goes with them because they were trying to allow for some uses conditionally, but not overdo it because of the limited areas of more intense rural development and other Growth Management Act type of things. But those things are specifically listed.
Okay. 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 Anyway, that's where it's that and the comprehensive plan that I was referencing as I was studying today. Mm-hmm. On what my thoughts would be. So I have to disregard, I guess, the district use zoning and refer only to the comprehensive plan for housing element. So keep going. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Vicki.
That's okay. We need to get the
clarity. Does anybody else have comments about that? Okay.
We want to have your questions answered to the best of our ability, Vicki, so it's not a problem to stop us if we need to try and get something clear for you. Or
okay, thank you.
Or even potentially identify if there's a shortcoming in our process where we miss something. That's always possible. So continuing on, I was at tier one and tier two definition, and then tier three or short-term rentals are those with larger occupancies over 12 total guests that would require a conditional use permit where they're allowed. And then restrictions on locations and numbers as tier two. Number allowed. So new non-owner occupied units or tier two and larger occupied short-term rentals over 12, so tier three, would be limited in number to 1% of the existing compliant short-term rentals documented countywide. Tier two and three short-term rentals.
My comment there is that it doesn't say the addition of. It makes sound like they could only be 1% of existing housing market or housing numbers. In actuality, our thought was it was 5%. With if it is under 5%, then up to 1% per year it can be increased.
Right. That's coming. That's down in here further.
Go ahead, Ed.
Thank you, Ryan. So yes, this is my comment, I guess, here. They had the 1% existing compliant short-term rentals countywide, and it's 5% short-term rentals zone-wide. And then I guess if you also looked at the charts regarding like where all the housing is, a majority of the housing is almost all in Wenatchee. And then that they have a very, very limited amount of STR. The majority of STRs, as we know, almost by double by any other's zip code, is in Leavenworth area. And so that would basically, all of that 1% will all be weighed into probably the highest usage would be in the Leavenworth area. And it doesn't seem fair that we have one for zone-wide and one for county-wide. Why was that exception? Why was that particular wording used, or that those particular figures used?
So, Jim, if it would help, I could explain a little.
I'm happy to stand aside on this.
So the 1% is to say how many total new short-term rentals could be permitted or allowed, rather. It's not getting to where yet. It's just saying the quantity. So we have different sources of information about how many short-term rentals they are. We don't know how many are really compliant, but what we know is how many are out there. So Host Compliance did a review across 5 platforms and they found over 1,500. The AirDNA data we have that gave us more detailed information is more like 1,350 across 2 platforms. But let's say it's 1,500. This would say 1% of that, so that's 15 new. And then the 5% helps you figure out where you could locate. So if an area is already above 5% short-term rentals, like Leavenworth, zip code, and I believe Manson as well, and there's other areas, you could not locate the new short-term rentals there. And when the Planning Commission made its recommendation, it also said if the countywide total was more than 5%, you couldn't effectively locate in the county. And when we updated the numbers, which are in Appendix D of this document that Jim has up, the countywide there it's more than 5% because
oh, no.
It's so high.
So can I just a question on the, and I'm new to this, so I have a question on the 5%. Where's that number come from?
So that was based on a study out of Oregon.
Yeah. Oh,
so this table here is showing by zip code, which areas exceed 5%. So the Leavenworth zip code and Manson zip code and Peshastin zip code, those three. And but countywide down at the bottom, you see a total. And this is off of our air DNA numbers, right? Because those are the ones we can geolocate more easily. The countywide number is over 5%.
Yeah, so my question though is, I read through this stuff before and I see where the numbers are. My question is, why did the Planning Commission, or why was the 5%?
Right. So there's an Oregon study that was done for several jurisdictions down there that recommended that jurisdictions consider not going above 5% because at that point it has the potential to affect the housing market, limit the supply of long-term rentals, or drive up the price of housing so that it's difficult for, it becomes less affordable. So there isn't a local study or a Washington study, but there are some recommendations in some of the reference material that the Planning Commission got back in April that do say, try to figure out a way to manage the number so that it does not affect the supply of housing. But they didn't give us a specific number that Oregon study did.
Okay, thank you.
If you go back to the STR webpage on community development site, short-term rentals page, there's a list of links there that has earlier presentations and data from Lisa's.
Yeah, I read through that, but I didn't really see. So one of my points is that in rural areas, percentages don't necessarily aren't a good reflection and a good number to use, primarily because it's rural and your numbers are low. And so therefore 5% becomes, is that a realistic number? And, one of the examples I will give is that City of Leavenworth has 15% of their housing is government supported, subsidized. And that seems like a high number, but given the low amount of housing that's in Leavenworth, 15% isn't really a very big number. So the same thing I would say in a rural area is that 5% is, I don't know if that's a good number.
So just wanted to clarify that these numbers are all unincorporated, so they do not include any city numbers.
I understand that. I was just giving a, percentages can be played with.
I think though, Joel, if you look at the maps before that, I think at line 501 to appendix of that, you'll notice that the concentration is fairly dense. There you go.
Yep.
Right
see that. I'm not arguing about the density, and I fully recognize that there's been a lot of overnight rental growth activity in the Leavenworth area and the Plain area and Lake Wenatchee area. I'm just wondering about the 5% number. That's all.
I think it's well agreed there, Joel, that every area and the dynamics of it can be much different, and we don't necessarily have to go with what someone else is using.
Yep. So that's fine.
Yeah. Jim speaking here. We had other numbers on the table. 8% was one. And so I don't know if five is still in stone or not.
Am I wrong in thinking that because you are at 6%, STRs won't be effective for a while until some start to sunset or some start to basically decommission?
That's as written. That's when we get to the actual code language. Yes, that's right.
Even if they wanted to go, let's say, into Wenatchee, which is at 0.8%, they will not be able to because there's a 6.8 number.
That's right. At different points, the Planning Commission had different language, but at the end, the countywide cap or limit, rather, was included. And
right. And that's where I think Joel, I mean, or someone would see that that seems to be a little bit off. The fact that we have 0.8% in Wenatchee and we're not allowing any STRs because countywide we're at 6.8.
And as your chair mentioned, you know, this is all up for your discussion.
That's right.
We're just saying.
This is Carl. I'd like to say that we came, one of the reasons we came to 5% was what percentage of housing stock in any given area be acceptable for the residents there and still allow for short-term vacation rentals. And the places that are over 5%, we heard many people complaining that it was too much in that area. And it affects a lot of things. And we did talk about 8% at one point in certain areas. But I think in the end, what we decided, not necessarily unanimously, was 5% was a good target for all areas, rural or otherwise, to have vacation rentals in and still maintain the neighborhood in a manner that was acceptable to the residents there.
This is Jim talking here, and I think that brings a new dynamic into the picture. Looking at this chart on the screen right now, it doesn't seem quite right that like he talked about in Wenatchee and Cashmere. Carl just mentioned that there's complaints, but it's only from my understanding from two areas that are far above the 5% or even the 8% number. And the rest of the county is mostly far under.
I agree. This is Vicki. And I think what I thought my thinking was that in those zones where they have the high numbers of short-term rentals, that they would be limited to 5% or 8% by their area. So the Lake Wenatchee area, 5%, the Leavenworth area, 5% of the total housing stock. I think we talked about Fish Lake, 5% of the total housing stock, which would be 1 in 20 homes. But that in other areas of the county, say that the Wenatchee area only has point something percent, they would be allowed to have 5%, up to 5% of their housing stock in order to enable, like in Malaga, to enable there to be some development for vacation renters or whatever happens. It has to be fair throughout the county.
I would agree with you, Vicki.
Is that a big change? No, changing countywide to zone wide?
We can change that.
Basically a one word change.
I think so.
In the code.
Yeah, it is.
Would there be a motion out there to do such a thing?
I'd like to
move. I don't. This is Carl. I don't understand what it is that's being proposed.
It's a discussion on, like, in each area, each individual, call it municipal city area or region, that each area would be able to go up to at least 5% in that area. So, like, say Wenatchee, that's at 0.08 could go up to potentially 5%, or Malaga that's at point something could eventually.
Jim, I think it's at line 172.
Yeah.
It already says that, I thought. First of all, and second of all, I don't think we should be discussing changes at this point until we get through what Jim's presentation is. And I'd like to decide on how we're going to approach this. Are we going to do line by line changes? Are we going to pass it as it's written? Or how are we going to do this?
I would think that we would address the items that each of us feel are appropriate to change based upon the change in how we're supposed to view this document based on the information that we're supposed to extrapolate that we supposedly never heard.
Sorry, I shrunk this down.
No, that's Biden's sound.
Do you want to continue where he was?
Can somebody clarify for me, doesn't the draft code already say the 5% is for each area?
It's the way it's in there. It's written that currently, I believe it's written so that it's a countywide as a whole, and being that the Manson, Peshaston, and Leavenworth areas are significantly higher, it brings up the average of all the others.
Yes. So that where the cursor is highlighted, that is countywide there. One of the last things the Planning Commission discussed towards the end of your previous process.
Yeah, it shifts down. It starts at the county. Oh, 6%. Nope, we can stop right there, right? No one allowed. And then it goes to the zip codes.
Right.
Okay.
I think if you're going
to
make a change,
I'd like to see what it says, because the way I read it, it already says what you're proposing. So I'm confused.
No, it's not.
If you take out countywide, then wherever it's not at 5%, you know, if there were 15 new units allowed per the count, the overall cap on line 167, they could go into zip codes or other locations that do not have a share of STRs at 5%.
Jim, why don't you proceed on through things, and then we will come back to address issues that we need to view to.
And based amend. On our, you bet. And based on our prior experience, I expected that the issue of that and sunsetting were probably going to be the ones that we were going to probably spend the most time revisiting. But
that sounds correct.
So we were moving through. We actually didn't have very far to go. What this document that I'm on basically does is it takes you through a summary of what is reflected in each section. And when we hit the capping issue, that's where we went down that path. So planned unit developments and master plan resorts are not subject to the cap because they operate under a different regime in the code where that's already preset through an agreement with the county when those processes go through. And that's why they're an exception in the code for all three tiers.
Can I ask, is there a distance between residential neighborhoods and these developments, how far away they have to be?
I don't think that's set in code. I think that's based on a case-by-case basis. If there's a condition of approval that is attached to that, that would be my guess, but I don't know that from experience. I've just, what little bit I've spent looking at master plan resorts and planned unit developments, I haven't seen anything in the code. I've been in there looking at it regarding Mission Ridge, what's in our code, the proposal for Mission Ridge, and I don't recall seeing that in the code. Distance.
Okay.
Operational standards. So that's where we had all the things like occupancy, parking, noise, solid waste, pool, hot tub monitoring, adequate sewer, water, fire preparedness. They had to have had all the expectations known. All that stuff is in that section of the code. Existing units, existing short-term rentals, this is where you start getting into sunsetting. established prior to the effective date of the code would need to meet criteria regarding the use allowances in their zones, locating in a zone that would that allowed for a similar use such as a bed and breakfast. Use as a short-term rental, proper payment of fees, and compliance with operational standards. Permits would need to be obtained as well. So where an existing units are in RR 2.5 RV and RW zones, but are on lots less than 2.5 acres, there's a 5-year sunset period on all of those. Where existing units are in a zone that prohibits them currently, but they can show they've been operating, they would have to get permitted, but they would have a 2-year sunset period.
So I have a question on that, Jim, just in terms of, as I read through this, so you have the 5-year sunset, and then you have a where existing units in a zone that prohibits them are a 2-year sunset period. And I could see that certain owners would try and go through a rezoning process, and certain owners would try and go through a conditional use permit. So say if you, the planning commission and the county commissioners pass this, and all of a sudden you get 8 or 9 of those rezones, what's the staffing like to actually work through those within a 2-year sunset period?
Well, I mean, it'd be a challenge. One of the things we were talking about when we went through this the first time was we're going to have to staff up. I've got a proposal prepared in the budget, actually, for the 2021 budget for 3 persons to take on the role of planner 2, a permit technician, and a clerk that would be our baseline staff of 3 to start this process up. So I've actually got that written into the budget draft that the county commissioners will be reviewing with me next month. So is that enough? I don't know. And some of this could change if the, regardless of what the draft comes out, if the county commissioners decide they want more CUPs or less CUPs, then that means maybe more hearing examiner time, which is under contract. Mr. Kottkamp, I don't believe, would have time necessarily to pick up that additional load, so we might have to actually employ another hearing examiner. It depends on what the permitting regime looks like in the final product. That's, in a lot of ways, going to drive the amount of staff resources that I need to apply to.
Okay. Thanks.
Now, is it possible, in order to avoid the CUP process, which does require that the hearings examiner be a part of it, can we just have a more thorough permit questionnaire where they answer all the things we're concerned about?
So you've written into the draft code in the prior draft a process where there is an opportunity for an administrative approval at my level. And that's where that mm-hmm. planner two comes in, that person that actually, whether he or she is preparing something for a CUP process or he or she is preparing something with those other staff for a administrative approval on my part, that's envisioned, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Lisa, in the existing draft code as we have it now, at least for certain applications.
Yeah, for the tier 3 for the CUP, that still assumes a hearing examiner, but the vast majority of the permits are either tier 1 or tier 2, and that would be administrative.
And that's to help reduce the backlog that would occur.
Correct. Can I move on?
Please.
Permit process. So once compliant numbers of existing units are established, that's that getting that baseline to know exactly who's on, you know, the numbers are based on compliance, not non-compliance. That's where that 1% cap of new units would be determined. And then we would determine whether there were opportunities to issue new permits that would be under any caps that exist. Then the new units could be permitted. First permit would require inspections and more detailed review, but annual renewal would be based on self-certification and a more abbreviated review process. So clearly standing up the program is going to take a lot more than it is to necessarily maintain it. Fees would be set to recover cost of permit reviews and inspections, such as by the fire marshal, health district, et cetera. This is that flow chart that you already saw in the presentation slide. and we already talked about the task force. And then the schedule is we're at the 23rd with no other meeting set. So depending on what happens tonight, we'll make that determination at the end of this meeting. And I believe that's it. And then we go into the actual code itself. So I would ask that you consider how you want to handle this with process moving forward, whether you want to walk through the code and say, yeah, we're okay with this, go on, or you want to dive into certain sections. However you want to proceed, just give me instruction and I'll go there.
Why don't we just walk through the code as it is? It's basically about 14 pages. Right. So, and I believe there's going to be two, maybe as many as four topics that'll be time will get spent on, and then the others I'm sure will be much quicker.
I figure.
Sure.
So we're in a district use chart, the existing district use chart, and this shows the where the short-term rentals, tier 1, 2, and 3 would be allowed and what the requirements would be. So you can see that P1 is permitted subject to development standards. P1 and P3, 3 is on there because of the sunsetting that kicks in on those that have a 3. P2.
So because that uses the sunsetting element, mm-hmm. in our previous discussions and where that originated was in that some of that verbiage that we're supposed to remove from our heads. Because
and don't discuss it.
Yeah. So
disregard it and don't reference it.
Luckily, so, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Makes it much easier.
Easier for you two guys, yeah.
So, you know, it comes into the discussion of where we want those numbers to perpetuate over time, being that you've got three areas that we know that the numbers are high, and then other areas that are the majority of the rest of the geographical area is significantly lower, and whether we wish to have some of that dissolve over time or continue or flatten or however we want to get to what that might be.
Yeah, I mean, you also have the option of not having a sunset clause and just put a cap on and let through normal attrition, but obviously for a lot of those, that might mean a lot of years before those numbers would make a significant downturn. But I mean, that's also an option for you as well.
Yeah. One of the things that kind of gets me, and there's some documents that were sent to us in some of the readings from that we got submitted by individuals. One was dealing with taxes and stuff that some of these have been paying on for years, which goes to the Department of Revenue, et cetera, that then is money that the county has been collecting through that source stream. And then they're being used where those funds have been used in some fashion, and the Chelan County has not returned funds or anything for a use that they were allowing that here we're saying is not allowed.
So you're concerned that the county is going to have to pay back the tax funds that they received from the Department of Revenue resulting from allowing the short-term rentals in zones where we say they're not going to be allowed anymore. Is that right?
Yes, as part, yes.
Well, I don't...
Well...
Go ahead. While we're waiting for you to go ahead, this is Carl. I'm going to just flat out say that I don't think we should sunset short-term rentals in Tier 2 in any of those locations. But I do think we should consider it in Tier 3 because those are the larger operations that generate more of the issues that we heard people complaining about.
but particularly rural waterfront tier two. First of all, rural waterfront is in basically Leavenworth and Manson areas. That's kind of it, with some exceptions. And second of all, I bet you there's less than 1% of the short-term vacation rentals are under 2.5 acres. So what we're saying with that is basically we're going to shut down every short-term vacation rental in the Leavenworth and Manson area that is considered rural waterfront. And I think that's too much of an extension of what we're trying to do.
But I'd also like to point out, when you're saying, well, we should sunset the tier threes and not the tier twos, is the fact that tier three short-term rentals, keep in mind that we have got all those retreat places. Those are considered tier three short-term rentals. That's where the church people go. That's where groups go. And they're existing, and for the most part, the people are near where that's located. And we're saying that all of those have to go. And I don't think that's right either.
I have a comment. I don't know about, I mean, if you look at the the official zoning maps that are on the community development of Chulainn County, almost a lot of those red dots are falling on mostly not less than 2.5 acre lots, for sure. And then the other one is, what was the original intent behind the 2.5 acres or smaller short-term rental, lots 2.5 acres or smaller, and then apply it only on RR 2.5, when we know that if you look on those zoning maps, most of those R10s and RR 20s and triple Rs are so subdivided that they're no longer rural 10 acres anymore. They're like small short plots. And so if the intent was that, well, 2.5 acres need to sunset because they're the ones that are actually caught too close to the neighbors, you can look at R10s throughout and see the fact that there's a lot of short-term rentals that are right next to their neighbor. And so if you're talking about intent, if the intent was that they're too close to the neighbor and they'll make a lot of noise and be disruptive, that applies to a lot of areas. Now, just to address Carl's, I would invite Carl to go visit the official zoning maps and just look at the Wenatchee Lake area and inspect the fact that most of those red dots are way below 2.5 acres. They're at 0.5 acres.
I believe that's exactly what I was saying.
Oh, is that right? Okay, I thought you were saying the opposite. I'm sorry, Carl.
I didn't make myself clear then. What I'm saying is that rural waterfront is almost entirely under 2.5 acres. And so we're going to get rid of all of them. And I think that's too much to ask for.
Are you guys seeing that?
Yeah. Yeah, it is where most of the complaints are coming from, though, right? I mean, it truly is where most of the complaints are coming from.
Well, you're right. There's a lot of complaints coming from those neighborhoods, but that's why you want to try to limit it as a percentage. And it was going to take time to do that. And also, well, you want to try to limit the numbers there, but to remove them completely, I think is just, I think it's too much. And I think you're inviting trouble down the road.
So I would agree. I would think that the 5% limit that we basically were tossing around. I read that article. I mean, the whole thing with Burke, and it seemed very, very, you know, it were very well thought out that the 5% limit is actually true. If we could apply basically the 5% limit to all districts, that might actually be good. And regardless of RR.
I think where it started out was, originally it was more globally, but then there was discussion because of the two or three areas that were much higher, and we started with numbers for those areas that were higher, but then ended up in the end coming down on what the overall number was, which unintentionally caused a overall countywide number to be lower than what I think we were going at.
Yeah, I mean, going that moving, bringing that 15.6% down to 5, that's going to affect RW. You're going to have to affect a lot of areas. And it's mostly going to affect RWs.
But that's through attrition, that comment, the 5%, wanting it to get down to that. That has nothing to do with the sunset. The sunset was something.
I just don't know how you're going to get it in attrition. It'll be 30 years before you get it through attrition.
Well,
the
right.
reason
and
for
and
my understanding for the reason for the sunset was to actually drive the number at a quicker pace than through attrition.
Right.
Yeah. And I think, you know, over and over again, I don't know how to deal with this specifically, because the way that the codes are written, you know, RV, RRR, RW, what it's saying is that short-term rentals, other than in recreational areas, are not compatible with neighborhoods, with residential neighborhoods. And so therefore, a change in the character of that neighborhood, increasing taxes, having strangers and fast cars or whatever the case might be, it's changing. And that's what we need to address. And I thought that's what we were trying to address.
But isn't RW recreational? I mean, a residential?
Yeah, it's residential water.
Yeah, it's residential. So you are including RW, right, Vicki? Because it's residential.
Well, it's residential waterfront. The thing is, let me just say, a lot of families had cabins on these lakes. Like Lake Wenatchee is a good example. And they had their family cabin that they've had in their family since whenever. And then these big homes are built on either side of them. And they're worth hundreds of thousands of dollars, okay? And that's what they pay. So then it increases the property taxes in that area so that the small cabin owner is paying $1,000 a month for property taxes, which is taken from a true case. And he has to sell because he can't afford to live there anymore. You know, there's ramifications from allowing this. And I think we need to address it.
That's a different topic.
Yeah. Because that's done in both, just in people just buying property of their choice and building what they want. Tends to dictate that whether it's a vacation rental or not.
Vicki, I have to say I agree with you and I understand the position you take, but we have to remember these horses have already left this barn and we already have vacation rentals. And there are some that would like you to know that vacation rentals aren't allowed by one reading of the district use charts. And that may all be true, but again, they're already here. They already exist. They're already all over our rural waterfront and everywhere else. And I think the best we can do for everyone is to try to limit them, but not to stop them completely.
Okay, and so what's your suggestion?
You use our percentages and make sure that they can't be sold as vacation rentals, or if they are sold as vacation rentals, for a very limited time. And also, I think, and I want to discuss this later, but we need to make sure that the code is clear that they can only advertise for the number of bedrooms that they were permitted for. And if they're on a septic system, that has to be included. And that is going to put the kibosh on a lot of vacation rentals on rural waterfront that are on septic systems.
Okay.
How do you want to proceed, Mr. Chair?
So I guess since we're on this particular page, I think it's probably the way to handle it is we've been discussing this item P3, and I guess what I'm would be asking, is there any motion to change that or keep or?
Ryan, I wanted to put a couple cents
sure,
into the equation. The sunset is one issue. The other issue is totally not allowing vacation rentals in those zones. It seems, I don't know if I'd say interesting or what, but that, and I think rural waterfront is the one that's usually in play, but disallowing them regardless of the percentage doesn't seem right or proper.
Agreed. Thank you.
If a certain area is under the 5% limit, it doesn't seem right that you should restrict that zone.
So.
Okay. So we are talking about a couple different things here then. First off, the sunsetting is what would disallow short-term rentals in certain areas, okay, 2.5 acres or smaller. And so that's we're discussing the fact that, pardon?
That's existing. That's not
of existing.
Considering new.
And so, but we're not stopping them. So what's happening, Jim, is if they're under 5%, the 5% allowed for each area, if they're under that, they can increase the number of short-term rentals up to 1% of the housing stock.
1%
of that allows for rentals.
Not in tier 2 and tier 3, the way I read it.
On tier 2 and tier 3, yeah. Tier 1 is excluded from that. Sorry. And so, Jim, they are allowing for additional ones, but we don't want to saturate the neighborhoods or the areas with only short-term rentals and disallowing residents of Chelan County from enjoying the waterfront or whatever okay. The area has to be.
So either you're reading it wrong or I'm reading it wrong, because I understood that meant in tier 2 and 3, they were not allowed regardless of the percentage of in the county or in the area.
Oh, is that true?
Well, at the end of the sunset period, Jim is exactly right.
So we need to discuss whether we want the sunset in there or not.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to point out is we've essentially got two issues here with the 2.5 zoning. One is sunsetting the ones that are existing now, and the other issue is not allowing new, after the percentage is met, not allowing new short-term rentals in tier 2 and tier 3. Somebody help me out here.
Yeah, so there's a bell.
So it seems to me that at the end of the sunset period, new ones would not be allowed in those areas. Prior to the sunset period, the way I read it, you would allow new ones, but they still would sunset at the end of the time period. So effectively, I think that means that you won't have any new ones in those zones at all, because who wants to have a vacation rental for 5 years and then have to shut it down?
So just the way I read this, and I'm new, so I might be mistaken, but the way I read this is that in those areas, especially the R2, if you didn't meet the criteria for being able to have a overnight rental, that would sunset within 5 years. If, however, after that point in time, well, even through that point in time, if the zone or the, not the zone, but the area was less than the 5% number and you could meet the criteria, you could still establish a new short-term rental facility.
And I don't think that's true in the
that's not what's
V, R, W, and RR 2.5. At the end of the sunset period, there won't be any period in the sentence.
Yeah, that's it. In this section on line 231 I've got up here, within those zones, short-term rentals on lots 2.5 acres or smaller shall sunset within 5 years.
Right. Yeah. So you'd have to.
Doesn't P1 kick in after that? I mean, remember that the, if you could go back to that graph, there are two items on there. On RR 2.5, short-term rentals tier 2, P1 and P3. So obviously P3 is going to basically be put in place in order to put a forcing factor to try to force that 16% value down to 5%. But then after that, P1 kicks in. The P3 is only effective for existing rentals.
No. Basically what would happen is if it's blank, you can't have it. So it's initially P1 because even if you're going to be in there for whether it's 2 years, 5 years, whatever's being sunsetted on whatever timeline, it is P1 while that sunset period is running. Once the sunset period hits, that square goes white.
Yeah. Because that's not, okay, yeah. I see. I read it that it actually shifts over like some of the other P1s, you see.
No, because this is just for a visual aid, having a use chart, the language in the code itself dictates. And so we have to have something in that box for the period of time that it's allowed. And that's why the 3 is there, because it's referencing the sunset. So when, like where my cursor's hovering here, when that 5 years hits, that box goes white.
I see. So I think my preference would be, I would agree with Carl that we need to have the 5% be applied across the board and allow these all areas to allow them within a 5% zoning area. But I still think the only way you're going to get that 60% down is by having some sort of sunset clause.
But I think in general, what we're getting at here and listening to all this is the P3 would be stricken completely.
I know, and that's not really, you would be nowhere near accomplishing what our residents want in accomplishing this.
But you're hitting everything when you do that, not those specific, call it market areas.
Well, actually, what you're doing is that we don't want, say, I would agree with taking the P3 off of rural waterfront. Because that's where you have so many.
It's residential
waterfront.
They're good. Okay.
Yeah. And then I would put a P3. I keep the P3 on RV because that's rural village and that's what neighborhoods are.
Well, rural village is. Rural villages are often recreational areas, typically, Vicki.
No, RRR is recreational.
I don't know. I live in an RV area and it's recreational.
So according to Steve Craig, I think anything worth over $1 million where the actual property is over $1 million, they're not going to use it for, for this. It's either going to be a trophy house or it's going to be something that they use for personal use, right? The ones that you're concerned about are the $200,000 to $600,000 range. And those are across the street on what we call the residential waterfront. But I don't know why you want to take it off of residential waterfront, especially if you look at the map and notice that Fish Lake and Lake Wenatchee has a significant problem.
They do have a significant problem. Well, I don't know. I was just trying to compromise there. But the thing is that we are concerned. The higher valued homes are the ones, they're buying those homes at inflated prices in order because they know they could get $4,000 a week from them and still pay their mortgage. So they're building up for a retirement home, but in the meantime, making money off of it. So those higher priced homes are in the market or are in there.
And let me speak from living on Lake Chelan. Ed, next summer, and I cordially invite you out. We'll take you out in the boat and we'll show you the $1 million plus homes that are vacation rentals.
Okay. Yeah, it's not like that.
Shocking.
Okay. I don't know how those numbers figure out, but I know that if you look at the economies of it, it makes sense to basically do this, right? But only if it's under 600 to 800. The rest of it, you're actually still having to bleed a little bit.
Chair, could I make one clarification?
Go for it.
Lisa.
On the off chance that in these zones where there's the P3 have lots that are greater than 2.5 acres in size, there may not be many, but to that extent, they would fall under P1, and it's only the ones that are on the smaller lots that would sunset. I just wanted to make that clarification. And Jim's right, for those that are under 2.5, effectively this chart helps show that they are allowed for the period of time.
So striking P3 would not hurt them.
Yeah, that you can still, the commission can do whatever they want in terms of whether you want a sunset or not, but I just wanted to mention that for some units, it wouldn't become a blank in the future because they might have the lot that's greater than 2.5 acres.
This is Carl again. I think we need to remove the sunsetting for the tier two in all positions.
Are you making,
is that a motion?
I will make a motion as such to remove sunsetting for tier two on the district use chart line 90.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
We got a second from Jim. Or any discussion?
If I could say again, once again, I don't know. You don't have a substitute for trying to reduce this number down. I mean, there's no solution here. All you have is, you know, a removal of sunsetting without necessarily coming up with, but we can do it with this in place. And that'll take that, if the other thing that we're talking about will take 30 years, if not longer.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're first of all, you're going to have your percentages that we've been discussing, and that is a very slow process. I agree. Limiting the sale of them could be another. But again, I want to say that if we put in strong language to ensure that the permitted number of bedrooms, both from community development and Chelan Douglas County Health District, where applicable, will reduce the numbers. Not as much as sunsetting, nothing will, but.
Okay, the question is then, we had also, I thought the 2-year sunset was for the ones you're describing, that if they don't meet the criteria, they don't have big enough septic systems and they're not going to build bigger septic systems or whatever.
It'll automatically
that sunset at 2 years because they need to be given that time.
That's if they don't, if they aren't conforming.
Yeah, because they won't conform, so that'll
exactly
occur. So we've and got a motion on.
So that's this language, the non-conforming.
So we got Carl's motion on the table. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Aye.
Nay.
Okay, does not pass. Let's
what
move
the
forward. It looked like about 2 yays and 5 nays.
Okay.
Let's move on then.
So that, excuse me, Brian.
Sure.
The second issue with that 2.5 acres on those zones is that I'd like to put or keep on the table is disallowing those in tier two and tier three once the percentage in the county has come down. The way it's written now, once these, unless you already have one in one of those zones, you're not going to be allowed to, regardless of the sun setting.
Correct.
Can I offer a friendly, a different suggestion? Again, I say, if we were to have the P3 only on the RV and take it off of RW, which is water, recreational waterfront, would that be something that we can work with? So it's taking it out of the neighborhoods and allowing it to be in the RW and RR, and we're still working towards that 5% through attrition.
I think Jim had a motion though. First, we need should address.
I'm sorry, I didn't put it in a motion, but I just for more discussion now. But I can if you want to. I wanted to hear other member comments.
And Vicki, you want to restate what you've just said?
Yeah, but we also need to change what P3 means. But, okay, so I move that we take the P3 off of RW, which is waterfront recreational or residential waterfront, and we put it on RV only. And then we change the definition to shall sunset, short-term rental shall sunset within 5 years, and take off that 2.5 acres or smaller. Because now we're giving conditions when it's not.
So Vicki, just to be clear, RV is Fish Lake only, is all of Fish Lake, right?
RV is rural village.
We've got
if you look at the zoning map, could you go to line 510, please?
Yeah,
501 real quick.
501 in the document.
Vicki, rural village is a lot of recreational areas.
Well, then we need to get the codes fixed because where are the neighborhoods? There's no place for neighborhoods.
Yeah, Vicki, let me show you just all of so Lake Wenatchee, all of those dots there. I'm looking at the zoning maps simultaneously and trying to switch back and forth. All the ones on Lake Wenatchee there are considered RW, which, by the way, I'll live in one of those little spots. So it is residential. We're here permanently, and we have neighbors, too. And then all of the ones, if you go to the right of that, all of that is RW, but all the ones over here to Fish Lake is RV.
Okay, so that means that the short-term rentals on Fish Lake would sunset in the five-year period.
Why basically saying one is more is less important than the other?
It's not so much less important as, again, referring back to our comprehensive plan where we are trying to not destroy the feel of the character of the area. And Fish Lake was always a quiet fishing lake. And now it's got short-term rentals all over the place. And people that lived there all those years are moving away because it's not the same. Go ahead.
Could you tab back to line 501, I guess? It's the one that had all the red dots. And we can really talk about, you know, what we're talking about.
I'm coming.
It just seems a little backwards to me. That's all.
If I go dark, it's because this building has automatic light.
No, all they can see is that picture.
Okay, so.
Vicky, do you see why I see it as backwards? Because it seems to me like Fish Lake should have these, and then neighborhoods that people are living permanently in, like in Lake Wenatchee, those shouldn't have. You see why I'm a little bit confused? Like Fish Lake, okay, I agree. It actually was recreational, but we're not gonna allow short-term rentals on it. Lake Wenatchee, which has many people that live on it permanently. Okay, no, we're gonna go ahead and allow short-term rentals there. It seems backwards to me.
Okay, so it's all, Lake Wenatchee is all RW?
Yes. Both sides of the street, waterfront and non-waterfront, except for if you cross 207. And then it's RR5 and RRR.
Okay. Yeah,
for whatever reason, it's zoned differently between the two.
Wow.
I'm looking at the, so I'll pull that back up real quickly here so you can see it.
But do you see, Vicky, what I mean? You were basically saying that Fish Lake was a wonderful little area where people had little cabins. We're going to restrict that to no short-term rentals. And then if you come to Lake Wenatchee, there's a lot of folks that are living here full-time. And I think it's more than basically just people living here full-time. It's about the people that actually establish a residence here and then buy a home as a second home. You know, those people contribute to basically helping us make trails. They contribute to basically the Nason Ridge project that we had a while ago. They basically were the biggest contributors in terms of buying that land because they have a commitment to it. And I think the biggest complaint that we have with STRs is that it really is just a business. And I'm trying to squeeze every single penny I can out of this, you know? So I don't know, I agree with you. I don't like the fact that we're not applying the 5% rule to the RW and the RV. You know,
the 5% rule applies to every area. That's a separate issue.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, we're talking sunsetting versus not sunsetting, but 5% is Lake Wenatchee, Fish Lake, you know, that's 98816, right? Mm-hmm. That whole area should be limited to 5%, and it's not.
Right.
Okay. And so anyway, it'll help to even things out. I guess the P3, well, you can't really fairly distribute it by putting P3 on anything. But I don't know. Are we all saying what's done is done?
Well, we have the opportunity to adjust it.
So are we suggesting we should remove sunsetting provisions on RW and RV, Romeo Victor?
Well, if you do that, you just cross the board is the way it works. So you would just, I would assume you just remove sunsetting completely. If you do it, then it just cleans all that up.
We just have a motion on that?
Yeah, we just voted on that.
Yep.
Sorry.
When?
Should we reconsider?
Yeah, and you can make another motion.
Vicky, I think we need to basically look at the zoning maps and see how it affects and impacts these red dots. I think you'll find that even in plain, you know, the 98826 RW has a lot of red dots on it. And so taking that out will mean that you're really effectively not doing anything in the short term for relieving the stress on the STRs.
Relieving the stress on the STR?
Yeah, I don't understand that. Don't you mean relieving stress on the neighbors?
That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the neighbors were concerned about.
Yeah.
No, we're not. We're not doing anything. And so maybe we need to look at creating different codes.
You know, Vicki, maybe, or Jim, is there any way to get an impact that depending on different solutions that we actually have? Let's say, for example, we decide to basically take RW off the table. It's like we're walking almost in the blind. How does that impact those red dots, you know? And I think then we can clearly see that, wait a minute, if we take, you know, P3 away from RW, you know, is this where all the red dots are, right? And so I think that, is there any way for us to, you know, maybe get Lisa or someone to just kind of send us something that says, if you do this, if you take this out, it's essentially not affecting this area. Or if you put this in, then this is how many true STRs are going to be removed. We don't have that on this chart. It's really hard to make a decision on really working in the blind regarding if we basically do P3, what is the impact, you know, in 5 years?
So, Jim, we have identified the number of STRs by zone across the county. We can zero in on areas. But we don't really know a lot of specifics about each of the units to the point of knowing exactly how many are compliant, right, with all of the criteria. But we can say roughly what number of units are in that area. And so if you allow or don't allow in a particular area, we can give you round numbers.
And Ed, you're looking for them based upon zoning is what you're looking for?
Yeah, it seems like we're in the blind here in terms of like we have this, all these district use charts, but we're in the blind as to what the impact is of each particular one.
Jim, I have a table up that if you let me share my screen, I can do so.
I will do that. Do that right now. I'm gonna stop share.
While she's doing that, the other thing that plays into this is not just RW, but it's the 2.5 acres. I don't know how much. I mean.
Yeah, because most of those are actually not just there, but across the board, probably the majority of all of them are probably less than an acre in size.
22% on RW.
Right.
Majority of the STRs are on RW.
Right. Across the county. So there's other areas beyond Lake Wenatchee.
Thank you. This is very, very enlightening, Lisa. Thank you.
So it looks like the heaviest ones are in that RW and in the RR5s.
RR2.5.
Yeah, so the rural villages that we were discussing before was just 4%.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting, like okay. I just asked, what RWs are 2.5?
We would need to do some research on how many lots are meeting that or below that number.
Well,
and I believe Deanna mentioned previously that sometimes, you know, there's a lot of lots smaller than the minimum lot size of the zone, but we don't have those numbers ready right now.
Yeah, and we wouldn't have them. We were going to have an intern work on that. We figured that was at least a month-long project, but we weren't able to pull that together. Mm-hmm. It would take somebody who knows GIS. And
yeah, just looking at the maps, almost all the RWs are under 2.5. Just the lot size.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Can we, okay, so if we take the P3s off And then we have a different deal, which is number one, that short-term rentals cannot be sold as short-term rentals. So that way they've got their investment. It was intended to be their retirement home, blah, blah, blah. We're taking that into consideration. Number two, that all the short-term rentals that do not conform, that don't have the right septic tank system, that end up with so many complaints over a year, that da-da-da-da-da, those sunset within 2 years. The ones that are non-conforming. And then leave the rest alone.
What kind of impact do you think you'll have on that 15.6%?
I have no idea what's conforming and not conforming. But I don't think they should be sold as short-term rentals because there is a problem.
Yeah, I agree. But I'm not sure, with all due respect, Ed, I don't know why we need to know what the impact is.
Well, we're trying to basically allow, this is why we're here. We're here because of the fact that there is impact. But
we already know the impact based on public comments. We've gotten thousands of pages of emails and of all kinds of comments. So we do have that data.
So our remedy needs to basically attack that.
That's what we're trying to do. The data is from both short-term vacation rental owners and people impacted by them. And we have to find a balance.
And so, Ed, in a lot of our previous discussion meetings over the last almost 2 years now, has been dealing with ways of getting some nutrition, but not making it necessarily too impactful all at once. And then the other was on the enforcement side of things, of trying to figure out ways for regulations in which are in place to be enforced, which not necessarily have been totally enforced in the past, and looking at not necessarily having to create more regulation, but trying to keep or somehow handle things in a manner that we're only creating stuff that will be enforced, not creating things that won't be enforced.
Right. And we're sticking with land use issues.
Correct.
That's going to be important. Can I, you know, just to kind of put things in focus a little bit, I know that we've got to consider everything, but I think it's important that we know that you hear what the comprehensive plan says about housing. Do you guys want to hear that?
You've got it up. Go ahead.
What it says is encourage the availability of affordable housing to all economic segments of the population of the county. The second one is promote a variety of residential densities and housing types to meet needs of all existing and future residents of Chelan County. Encourage the appropriate preservation of existing housing stock. Support regulatory changes and economic programs that promote affordable housing options. And finally, support year-round and seasonal agricultural worker housing. And those are supposed to be the comprehensive plan focuses on that for our housing. And what it does is it takes into consideration the impacts some of this new stuff is having on the residents. And even though we can't do anything about it, I think we can work towards normalizing things at least to the 5% eventually through attrition and through nonconformity.
Yeah, I would, you know, after reviewing this a little bit is, you know, and I would agree with the comments made here, is just how fast do you want to get there? And I mean, with the sunset, you're going to push the ball a little further down the road, whereas if you wait for attrition or you, the idea of allowing those tier twos to exist, but not allowing them to be sold as overnight rentals. That's not a quick as move as the sunset, but it does turn the boat, so to speak. So I guess that's the question from the Planning Commission is how fast do you want to turn the boat, right?
That would be correct.
Yeah.
I think we have to recognize, as I hope I said before, that vacation rentals have already been allowed in all these zones we're talking about, and not for just a couple of years, for a long time. So to suddenly throw them out is going to invite a lot of adversity that we might not need nor want.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure, though, the city of Leavenworth had these same issues. The city of Chelan had these same issues. Mm-hmm. They implemented some very strict STRs. And I don't think anybody basically came after them. The same thing goes for what we saw with the fact that Bend had some very strict, I'm sure they also had. Now, if we were to basically follow suit with, let's say, precedent, and that is either, I think you said Pacific County or what Bend did, and if we were informed regarding that this is the state of affairs that they actually had in place, and then they implemented these sunset periods in order to basically accomplish what they needed to accomplish, then we have precedent. And then I think the likelihood of any sort of like in particular legal action is going to be very, very low.
So, we're running out of time here for the night. So, and we've made really no progress. But I mean, we've got discussions which are all good. I think what we should do is, if there's direction on any information that would be helpful for us, that we suggest that to staff and Lisa to be able to generate to help us make some decisions moving forward. So if each of you have something out there that would specifically help you to navigate a decision of whatever it might be moving forward, if you could please bring that up at this time.
This is Jim. It'd be nice to know what some of these other areas like Bend and Pacific County and such have done with what we're calling, what we discussed as the 1%. So essentially 1% or 5%, but how we get those numbers, whether it be countywide or whether it be by zip code, or I wonder if they ran into the same problem.
And one that I'd like to add, and this is just based upon going through all the various documents that have been sent to us from the public, as well as some of the testimonies, is if there's a way of generating a map that helps show where the heavy complaint areas are, because it sounds like it's minimal. It isn't. No, it's not.
A lot of times the complaints we get don't give an address or anything like that, even in the comment letter. So it would be about as
well. I know in the information that we've got, at least in the written form, people gave their name and addresses of where they were at, and they would suggest that it's a neighbor. So I know in a lot of those, we could pinpoint where a good portion of them are. They seem to be in similar areas.
So and I could
maybe understand what their zoning is or what their dynamic is that's going on in those spaces that's potentially causing them grief.
So you'd want to see a map with pins on it where the hot spots have been.
Exactly.
Yeah, I can work with Lisa on that. There might be a way for us to, I could assign a staff member to go through the comments where we've got addresses and asserted locations and try and populate a map with that. I can also talk with Dina about that as well. So we'll see if we can put something like that together. Yeah, we've got a lot of comments.
Would there be a possibility of maybe anything from the sheriff's office of things that they've got to be able to pinpoint where they're being told to go?
No, I think generally not, because the discussions I've had with the sheriff have been, you know, when they get a complaint, they might have in the narrative, but not in the, like, in a searchable subject line that this is a short-term rental that we're going to.
Sure.
Rather, it's just a noise complaint. And so maybe the deputy writes in the narrative that this was a short-term rental that I went to or whatever, but it's not categorized as a complaint, separating out short-term rental noise complaints versus just a general noise complaint, a guy running a chainsaw at 5 a.m.
Okay.
Okay. Can I point out that it's not fair to single out groups of people that have organized themselves because they are have been impacted by short-term rentals? And if we're talking about it just being in a certain area and that's where the major complaints are coming from, I don't think that's fair, because also on the other end, we've got the Leavenworth group of people with short-term rentals that have all come from a certain area, or they're all centralized through that one group that has that website. So, well, you know what I'm saying?
I guess another data point to that, Vicki, we could, you know, potentially, if there's a way of telling where these individuals live that own these vacation rentals, if they're locally, like if they're Chelan County residents that own them, or if they're out of the area that own those.
That's a good
units.
One too.
Yeah, that we don't have the site-by-site data because AirDNA doesn't provide it at that fine scale. They fuzz the data. And that would be a very big lift to go through 12 to 1500 and try and find out the address for each and every one in any kind of a timely fashion. I don't have staff that could do that. Even if we had the, okay, here's the thing. Now we got to go research the tax data and find out where the tax bill goes to, if it goes to Western Washington or where.
Yeah, that's how they would do it.
Okay. Are there any other items out there that would be helpful for?
I think most importantly for me would be precedent. Can we follow precedent with what let's say Pacific County did, or with what Ben did? And I think Jim kind of, that to me would be like really, really telling, I think.
We have a lot of that pulled together, so we can bring that back.
Excellent.
Right. Do Oregon laws differ much from Washington laws? Because I know that Ben is very much like Wenatchee as far as where we're located in the state. So can we, by looking at Ben, would that be a good example, or do we need to look at a Washington one?
I would suggest we look at both. They have, their growth management laws differ from ours in that mm-hmm. there it's a little more top down and ours is a little more bottom up.
Hmm. So at this time, why don't we table things for our next meeting to continue on deliberating short-term rentals at our next decided meeting. And we have an item of new business to discuss dealing with the meeting start time during the winter months, where historically we've gone a little bit earlier because the hours of light have been shorter. And whether you as a planning commission would like to change it to an earlier time, like 6 o'clock, or continue on as it has been at 7.
Yeah,
well,
that's
I personally what we would like to see.
That's what we've done in the past, is change it back and forth, depending on the season and the light. So it's about, this is when we've done it.
Or do you want to wait till daylight savings time as it shifts? Or
no. Is harvest almost over for you, Jim?
Yeah, harvest is over for the most part.
And that's the one person that we were taking that into account for. Are there any other orchardists on the line?
Well, that's somewhat true, but I think it was also just because people are doing things and the like, so.
It was also for driving considerations, but I think we should go back to 6 o'clock with a stipulation that they don't last longer than 2 hours.
Sounds wonderful. So is that a motion, Carl?
I make that a motion. New start time, 6 o'clock, until we change it again. And meeting length, 2 hours, unless we decide otherwise.
Second.
So we got a first from Carl and a second from Joel. Yeah. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Next meeting will be held at 6 p.m.
Is that going to be a special meeting because of the fact that we're delaying this decision, or is it going to be a month from now?
Can I insert something just for a second?
Go ahead, Jim.
Ordinance. So I've been speaking with Christina Woolman from Pertit, and we've been having staff discussions about the challenges of presenting critical area ordinance in a way that would satisfy the Planning Commission that we've done enough of the staff work to bring you a product that's easily explainable for the changes. And we're proposing that we do a technical committee. We basically bring staff together from our department, Natural Resources Department, possibly a volunteer member from the Planning Commission to participate on that and try and drill down and make a better product that's more refined, so we have a clear ask for the planning commissioners. So that would necessarily take the critical areas ordinance away for now and set it aside for a couple months, because we've also got comp plan amendments that Catherine's going to need to be bringing forward to you in the very near term as well. So we're trying to kind of clear the decks a little bit, recognizing that STR was an unexpected remand. Critical areas is there. We need to get it done, but it's still overdue. We think we need to do a better job of putting it together before bringing it back to you, so we can pull that aside if you're willing to let us do that. And then we can have this discussion about how you want to work the comp plan amendment process in with this STR piece. And that's where I'm going to ask Catherine to be part of the discussion as well.
With regard to the critical areas ordinance, I would like to make sure that as you guys, because you're talking to agency departments or two departments, not representation except for one person representing the public, please make sure that anything that is done on the critical areas ordinance, if it becomes stricter or less or more restrictive to the public, that it's something that was required, not because we wanted it in there. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Always staying on the less restrictive side.
Yep, I got it.
Yes, that's what we...
That's the prism we will look at it through before bringing it to you.
Okay, good.
And that's just an update, correct, Jim?
Yes, that's correct. It's just an update. Well, no. You can argue we have a critical ordinance areas right. ordinance. There's a particular section in it, the fish and wildlife section, that's essentially all new because it's okay. Completely right. So, and we really didn't get into that with you. We hadn't made it to that point. So we want to make sure, relative to Vicky's comment just a moment ago, we want to make sure that that's a need to have, not a nice to have for what agencies want.
Okay.
Good.
Does that cover it, Vicki?
Yeah, and I think that's what the misunderstanding was way back, is that it used to be when we had something before our commission that the community development came to us and had a, well, this is what we're presenting to you, and these are the changes we had to make, and this is the reason for the changes. So if we had heard initially that the reason for changing and making the wording more restrictive was because we are required to comply with what ecology wants, then we would have been able to go along with it, but we weren't explained that type of thing.
Right, and I'm hearing what you and other planning commissioners have been saying, and that's what resulted in the recent conversation with Christina about a process where we would pull that back and make sure that we've got those types of questions answered prior to bringing it to you, so we can focus the discussion in a productive way for the planning commission.
Okay.
Cool.
So
then that brings us back to STRs.
And timeline for that. What kind of timeline would it take for generating this data that we're discussing?
I would personally like to see a special meeting on October Tuesday, the second Tuesday of the month.
I have a water board meeting tonight. Wednesdays are better.
Did I hear someone on the water?
I meant Wednesday. I'm sorry. October 7th.
Is that a Wednesday?
It is.
Yes, that's a Wednesday.
Okay.
Is it possible to get the data by the 30th of September?
That'd be next Wednesday?
Yes.
We have the example codes from the other jurisdictions in a chart form already.
Do you still want that list of hotspots based on the letters?
Yes, I think that's important.
Yeah, I don't know if I can get that by the 30th. I can try.
Would October 14th be better then, Jim, to allow for that?
No.
Somebody said no.
Well, this is Carl. The 7th of October is, I could probably make it myself, but I won't be in the area and will be visiting family almost certainly. So it will take that time away from me, but that's why I didn't want the 7th.
Well, 14th will work for community development, and I think we can probably more assuredly get the other data points together if we push it out to the 14th. That also gives us more time for noticing on a special meeting.
All right.
Your following meeting would be 2 weeks after that.
Yeah, that would be our normally scheduled meeting for the 28th of October.
Yes.
I have a planning commission course from 6 p.m. to 8:30 p.m.
On the 14th?
On the 14th.
Well, we could also do the 15th, Thursday.
Okay, 15th would work.
How about the rest?
That'll work.
It can work if I don't go on vacation.
Is that something that requires a formal motion, or is this just something we can
do? I think that would be a motion needs to be made.
This is Carl. I move that we establish a special meeting to review further review short-term vacation rentals on the 15th of October at 6 p.m., ending at 8 p.m.
Is there a second?
Second.
I second.
So James seconded. Carl made the motion. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. We'll have a special meeting on Thursday, October 15th at 6 p.m. via Zoom.
We'll set it up.
All right. And I do not have anything further. Anyone on the board have anything further that they would like
to add? I just want to say thank you to all of you. I think it's going to be great working with all of you. You all seem very competent and very thorough.
Thank you, Ed.
Can I ask
Ed, thank you also for the extra work you did on that short-term rental locations in history. That was nice.
Thank you, Vicki.
Catherine, do we need to provide anything to the chair regarding the comp plan amendment process? Just a timeline issue or anything?
Chairman and members of the commission, we are putting together some comp plan amendments that we've received from applicants. There are four of them are requesting land use changes, and one of them is a possible text amendment to the comprehensive plan. We were hoping at your October 23rd, I think it is, meeting, that we would give you, just do a workshop, just kind of run through what's being requested, and then potentially have your public hearing on your at your November meeting, and then possible deliberation in December.
So October 28th then?
Yes.
Okay.
That it would be more of a workshop type item, just to, and that way, if you still have other business to attend to, we can just make it kind of a brief run through, just so you have an idea of what's coming and any questions you may have before we bring forward a formal reports.
All right. Thank you, Catherine. And thank you, Jim and fellow members, for taking the time this evening. With that, here I'll accept a motion for closing tonight's meeting.
I move that we close the meeting.
I second it.
So we've got a first by Vicki and a second by Ed. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Have a wonderful night's sleep. Thank you.
Hey, Jim, this is Carl. Has anybody been, names been put forward to replace Greg?
Not that I'm aware of. There's been, I provided the resignation to the board, and the affected district is Commissioner England, the chair.
Okay, thanks, I appreciate it.